Curious Talks with Leif and Elfie.
Each episode, we're unpacking the brains of experts from around the universe.
Artificial intelligence has changed the way we manufacture, spend our leisure time, and gather information. But what does it mean for human intimacy in the future? Could we all be falling in love with robots? We're really excited to have Eleanor back in the studio to discuss the topic. Hi, Eleanor.
Hey, Eleanor.
Hi. How are you doing?
I can't quite hear you yet.
Oh.
Oh, I can hear you now. Okay,
yay.
Cool.
Hey, how are you doing? Woo.
I've got my cameras working again as well.
Oh, yay.
How
are
you guys?
Yeah, good. Really good, yeah. Thanks.
Good.
Good.
Good. I just can't cope with this.
Hair looks nice.
No, oh, I know.
We just washed it.
Oh, no. I'm waiting for the day still.
We just washed it.
Yeah, I need to wash it. I don't care anymore. But no, it'd be nice to have some fresh hair.
Oh, wow. I'm counting going in the sea now as like, that's a hair wash day, isn't it? Going to the sea.
Of course.
Scrabble
that's
about.
Good. I mean, it's a bit different to what I've got here. I'm going to start open water swimming again, you know, at the docks. Oh, so I'm going to be like jumping in the Mersey again next week, for fuck's sake.
Do a lot of people do it?
Quite a few, yeah. Like, it's got booked up really, really fast. Obviously, I tried to get in when the weather was a bit nicer. But literally, it's just so booked up. I think a lot of that, though, is because it's probably like the only sport you can really go back to at the moment.
Yeah.
Because obviously, it's like no contact unless you're drowning, really. You know what I mean? So,
they're doing we'll see.
Why, do you go swimming in the sea, like, all the time, then?
Oh, I think swimming's a bit much. I think if I stood up, it'd probably be, like, up to my boobs. It's not like proper swimming, but I like going low down in the water so it feels like it's deeper.
Oh, okay, that's nice.
No, it's but it's nice just to go for a paddle, isn't it?
I'll get behind that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, thanks for coming on again. Like, we're really excited to talk about sex robots. It'll be really good. We can say what we like this time, so yeah.
I'm totally uncensored, so that's
brilliant.
Cool.
Yay. Yeah, that'd be awesome. So, Eleanor, just for the listeners, can you give us a bit of sort of background of how you got interested in the topic of sex robots?
Yeah. Okay, so basically, I've read a lot of things about like the future of sex, the future of sex robots and AI. When I was at university and I was doing my communications module, and then on the side of that, I used to do some volunteer work at a homeless shelter. So obviously I used to meet like a lot of outdoor based sex workers. And I started looking at the future of the sex industry, basically. And when I was reading a lot about like sex robots, there was always a lot of talk about, yeah, well, you know, sex robots could replace sex workers in the sex industry. Mm. And, you know, they'd be free from STIs and it would, you know, get rid of the grey area that people have with humans sort of doing it because of, you know, ethics or the morality of it. And then I just obviously started comparing that with what I knew of sex workers and actually asking sex workers, what do you think? Do you think that you could almost be replaced? Because I don't think, you know, sex workers, it's not a job that you would easily or automatically think is going to be automated, if that makes sense. You know, like I think that a lot of industries have changed over the years because of automation. You know, there's so many people that just don't have jobs and have been totally replaced by robots. And yeah, it's kind of a bit surreal to think that that one day might be a sex worker because it's always been such a human job, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I suppose like a lot of jobs don't rely on the aesthetics of the machine carrying out the action either, so that's quite hard to get your head around.
So I just started kind of like comparing both of the like the information, if you will, and I've also called when I first got involved in that research area, I was calling for a bit of a collab between sex workers and like engineers, if you will, because I kind of thought it was a bit short-sighted to have a lot of like engineers and, you know, roboticists discussing the future of the sex industry without actually speaking to sex workers. Do you know what I mean? Like, you would never build a machine to replace, you know, another job without first looking at, you know, the dilemmas, the problems, the, you know, looking at that situation, if you will. to get a scope for what you need to do. And it felt like, you know, people were just kind of like trying to look over sex workers a bit, you know, like, oh no, we don't need to speak to them to, you know, build a sex robot.
What do you think was the reason for that, that they didn't want to get involved at that point?
To be honest, I think it's not just necessarily with sex robots. It's with everything. There isn't enough cohesion between like engineers and mathematicians and people that work in AI and data scientists with people in the humanities. Do you know what I mean? And I think that, well, you can see there's a shift in how we appreciate people in those different vocations in society. You know, there's such a look at what you get paid for in a STEM subject compared to, you know, if you do humanities or something creative, like it's a big, big difference. And I think that because people generally feel in those areas, like what they're doing can be really, I don't know, focus more on like the maths or the engineering side, you know, you can fail to look at the human factors. So, and I think that that's quite common in technology, actually, that we don't look at the human factors, and the people that are building those products don't always understand the needs of the consumers.
Do you feel like that's changing? Because I noticed a lot in sort of corporate world that I work in during the day sort of thing. It was very sort of siloed. You had people, you know, worker bees doing their work. And then obviously, like, the industry wants to bring in automation. But the only way they could really do that is to talk to those people who are siloed and pick up what they're doing. And kind of, I felt like there was a trend towards being more holistic and being more joined up and joining up areas of the business. And so maybe it's a similar...
Yeah, 100%. I think that more people are starting to do that. And I think that there's a huge movement, specifically within robotics as well, that has addressed the fact that, yes, building a robot or developing, you know, the artificial intelligence that a robot will use is a mathematical process, if you will. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't need research from psychology or you know, languages or linguistics or sociology. Do you know what I mean? And I think that there are a lot more organizations that are addressing that and try to unite them. Like, for example, Noel Sharkey, who I worked with, was one of my papers that I sent you. He runs, he's part of quite a few like affiliations and organizations to do with robots, and he has a thing called STEAM. So it's the idea that that it's incorporating like the arts basically in the STEM subjects, and he's really like a firm believer that we need to be more holistic and integrated with all disciplines, for sure.
I was going to say, because you mentioned arts, and I was thinking about sort of media and films, and do you feel like there's kind of been a lot more sci-fi, people interested in sort of anime, that sort of thing, where you see a lot of machine robots, hybrids. Do you think that's helping a wider audience get used to this idea and kind of plant the seed for them to kind of then accept it going forward?
Yeah, well, I think that, well, if you look at where anime was born, well, you know, where anime is most popular, where it is created, you know, like Japanese culture, they have an entirely different relationship with robots and artificial intelligence to what we do, what we're accustomed to here in the West. And I would say that they certainly are more accepting of robots. Like, I think there are obviously, you know, other different social and cultural reasons for that. But I do think that things like an exposure to anime might help expand your thinking. And your acceptance around those sort of things. Yeah, definitely. And I think that as well, I mean, I've noticed in the years that I've done this, there's been certain things in popular culture that have like triggered a debate. Like, for example, do you remember Humans on Channel 4?
Oh, I love that, yeah.
Yeah, that was, and I think that, you know what Humans was drawing on in society? I think that they pulled on a lot of stuff about like kind of like personalised assistance, and they've really so much more popular recently, haven't they? Like, you've got Alexa, you've got the Fitbit, you know, for like a Fitbit, a sports personal assistant, if you will, you know, on your wrist. And I think that, you know, by some logic, a sex robot is a kind of extension of a personal assistant, really, but heavily more embodied, really.
I guess you look at what's happening now as well. If you could have robot nurses and staff, you'd get around a lot of the issues we're having now.
I thought that's what you were going to say. It was about an increase, because of the COVID-19 thing, there might be an increase in people ordering sex robots, because obviously if you can't go out and meet a partner, bringing the partner to you.
No, that's really interesting, because we talked last time, didn't we, about the growth in teledildonics and all that stuff. But this is, in my mind at least, I don't know how you feel about it, it's like it's quite a far extension of that, isn't it, to make a humanoid sex robot from just the kind of component parts like a vibrator.
Yeah, I think it is a step, and I think that people will use sex robots in the future, but I think it will be a really, really gradual shift. So there's probably some going to be, you know, there's some other pieces of technology that are going to be a real key player in that, you know, I can't quite think of yet. For example, years ago when I first got into this, Alexa wasn't out. But now Alexa is out. I think that it's technology like that will feed into sex robots, really, because, you know, Alexa is helping and making advancements in, you know, voice recognition, voice control. And I suppose it's helping build on what we know about personal assistants and things like that. And to be fair, I think that there is a big link between personal assistants and sex robots as well, because I remember as well, and I don't know if you've read the book, but Kate Devlin speaks about the idea of personal assistants always having like a feminine kind of voice and tone. And why is that? And are we kind of embodying, you know, like femininity and domestic roles within technology,
you know, really reinforcing
those kind of negative stereotypes? And it is, isn't it? And when you think about it, if
are there any male voices for... personal, they're all female, aren't they, thinking about it?
Okay. I mean, maybe there's some that like sat navigators that are more male, but again, isn't that kind of crafty?
Because
it's like, oh well, if you're in your car, it can be a bloke.
Well, apparently,
do you know what I mean? Because they know better.
Yeah, male call center workers that sell car insurance do better than female, so that's interesting. It depends on the product you're selling, doesn't it? But God, I hadn't even thought about the fact that
and
it's interesting, because it's like, okay, so obviously some research goes into what's going to sell better for certain things, women or men, but then don't companies have a responsibility of maybe shaping that and changing the culture whereby people aren't biased towards certain types? Or maybe it doesn't work like that, I'm not sure.
I agree. I think companies do have I think in my mind anyway, companies do have a huge responsibility. And I think that the whole idea, I mean, the thing is, I think that, you know, all this stuff about like the voice assistants and everything, that is like a separate research thing on its own, to be honest with you. Like, and I would be keen to watch that space. But yeah, I mean, for me, what you could suggest from it is that sex robots, it will be easier for sex robots to always embody women in the future, because if the technology around them is feminized and domesticated, you know, sex robots can build on that a lot easier.
What about the issue then of, could it then objectify like kind of real women more so? Like if you've kind of got like porn, apparently, I think there's been some research where it can kind of make people have higher expectations about their own sex life, that sort of thing.
Yeah. To be honest, you know what? The more stuff I read about porn recently, I do think we've got a real problem with it. Because it's all well and good saying, oh, you know, just people watch it, it's just for pleasure, it's just for fantasy. And I get that. Do you know what I mean? I watch porn myself. I watch it quite a lot. But really, should I be watching it that much? Like, should I? Do you know what I mean? It's all just free. You don't kind of know the ethics behind it. I think that you do become desensitized when you watch it a lot. And I don't think you necessarily, it's like, oh, because I've watched an hour of porn this week, I'm more likely to batter me fella in the bedroom. No, I don't think that. But I think that you become generally more desensitized to what you see on the page, and I think even that's not that good, because you just become accustomed to like the language, the terminology. You know what I mean? And we don't know the evidence to suggest that that's impacted me massively outside my life, but I think that for some people, you know, perhaps I can handle it, perhaps I have a lot of sex in my, you know, and I'm able to make those comparisons and know what's real and what's not, but for some people they can't. And I think that's when the problem is. And we're in a society where we don't talk about sex. Sex is so taboo and porn's quite taboo. So where are these people going for answers? And I think a lot of kids start as well watching porn.
That is really frightening. You think in Victorian times they were worried about table legs sort of getting people a bit aroused and how much we've come on since then.
Yeah.
It seems almost like inevitable exposure is going to affect your response to it, doesn't it?
And going back to sex robots, yes, I do think that in a future, if you had loads of sex robots, every single one was like a Barbie doll, you know, like, for example, let's say in a hypothetical situation, every sex worker was replaced in Liverpool with like a robot that was perfectly moulded and whatever. I wouldn't agree with that. I would think that's bad, because to be honest, one thing that used to actually not shock me about the sex industry, but, you know, it was actually a pleasant surprise when I was researching escorts, was that, you know, they weren't all, you know, bloody like 6 foot models, always wearing heels, always amazingly dressed. Loads of them, you know, weren't like size eight. And, you know, they would say that I have, you know, had really regular clients that loved their body, you know, that didn't mind they had kids, that didn't mind their stretch marks, that, you know, they seemed, I think that actually, and you know what a few of them used to even say to me is, it's like, you know, sex work is totally different to porn because we don't all have those standards. You know, there is a bit more of a realism, if you will. And I thought that was quite interesting, really, because obviously, yeah, you know, I've seen it online. There are instances where sex workers are judged and mocked on their appearance. And but I think generally, you know, you would pass a sex worker in the street and you wouldn't even notice. You know, they could be a totally, totally ordinary person. Whereas, let's be honest, you could probably tell a bit different with a porn star, couldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah. How were your sort of expectations challenged working with sex workers or speaking with sex workers at that time?
I think actually, you know, looking back sometimes, it was probably a lot to take in because I was quite young when I started doing it. But I think that because I'd already been working in the homeless sector, that did really help me have a bit of understanding about social poverty and structural poverty and things like that. Because I mean, I think things like that are relevant to all aspects of the sex industry, because why is anybody ever doing that kind of work? It's to, you know, alleviate yourself from something or get better. And I think there's different there's certainly different definitions of poverty as well. You know, like one argument I used to have quite a lot about with people that were kind of anti the sex industry was that, you know, women don't need to be doing it. You know, you can claim benefits, you can do this, it's, you don't do it from a need. And it's like, well, to be honest, what kind of life have you got if, you know, you're living on bloody £8 a week, whatever, you know, like, you know, that's what I mean about the poverty. I think that there's different ways to escape it. And just because you're not struggling to eat doesn't mean that you still don't need money to get yourself out of that situation and grow as a person. And yeah.
Do you think that, so if there were sex robots and it kind of eliminated maybe the need for sex workers, then what would they do? Or could there be sort of robots that maybe protect them or something? Or I don't know, I'm just fantasizing here about different scenarios.
I don't think sex robots will ever replace sex workers, to be honest, and neither do sex workers. Like, they're literally not worried at all. Obviously, I think that there's definitely a market for them, but, you know, there's so many things that a sex robot can't do that a human would be able to. Like, for example, you can't have a drink with a sex robot, can you? You can't have a line. There's a lot of cocaine in the sex industry, so that's a bit of a blow for some people. Do you know what I mean? You wouldn't be able to get, you know, you wouldn't be able to, you could get a robot that would fake having a line, could fake having a drink maybe, but a lot of what clients sometimes like is that thought of, if someone's enjoying a drink with me, you know, they can taste it, they're having a line, they're getting, you know, they're losing control with them, if you will, you know what I mean, like getting into it.
Is there a lot of socializing as well as sex from your conversations that you've had?
Loads, a lot of it. I'd say it's more socializing than it is sex,
really. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Well, that does make sense, because sex isn't just the physical act. It's that sort of like feeling like you're kind of maybe in a relationship for the night or something, or with someone. And it's almost maybe therapeutic as well, or they're kind of, they're wanting someone that will listen. It's not just about the sexual act.
Because I mean, as well, like from when I spoke to, you know, some of the escorts, they would have regular clients that, and, you know, they would say, oh, you know, you only sleep with him. Sex is only 2 minutes. It's over. Most of the time you're chatting. You know, and like, if you just look at the time demographics of that, well, it's most of that really is talking. Like, yeah, you have seen them for a sexual purpose, but most of the time spent there is invested in a conversation, whether or not obviously it's emotional or you're invested in it, it's very much up to you individually. But, you know, that is the how the time really has been spent.
So when I'm thinking about a sex robot, I'm thinking of how they can replicate the physical act of sex. But actually, a large percentage of what they're trying to replicate is something that is very human, from what you're saying.
Well, I think that's what they would need to do to, if they were going to be work in the sex industry. Yeah, I mean, it depends on the different motivations. I think we're going to be a long, long way off from anything that had good enough AI to be believable and truly be like a companion that you could sleep with. So I think that for now, the industry is always going to be somewhat invested in the physical experience. And obviously, I know from my experience at Akero that that is a different market in itself, kind of male sex toys and male pleasure and stimulation. So there's a lot of things that will feed into it. There's already been examples of like sex doll brothels and whatever.
What do you know about them?
Well, obviously, that you're not really going to be having much of an emotional connection, are you, with a doll? And I don't know how long. I mean, obviously, for some people, it's enough and some people would enjoy it. I don't know how popular they're going to be because I think that, you know, the cleaning process of them, who the fuck wants to be doing that, really? The cleaning process.
It's right. As well.
Yeah, never really occurred to me about that. I suppose the thing with humans is they just clean themselves, isn't it? But if you've got a doll, God.
You might get some AI that cleans it, though. Robots that clean them.
Clean themselves, yeah, God. Good luck to see how they'd fucking put warranty or whatever on that. but yeah, there's a lot of logistical problems, to be honest. I mean, this is like another thing. There was a paper once that went out, like, why sex robots should replace people, you know, replace sex workers in the red light district. And that was one of the things, like, oh, they'll be STI free. And it's like, well, you can't really guarantee that, actually. Because the only way a sex worker really guarantees that is because it's in her interest. To be protected, isn't it? I mean, I think you'll find as well the clients have a very, very poor track record of having the same sort of consideration. There's a lot of instances about clients always asking for, like, you know, no protection. There's always been a big myth that, you know, like, prostitutes are dirty and they're STI ridden, but it's all the statistics always points, you know, even recent research is that it's guys that are always more willing to do it without protection. So it doesn't, you know, it doesn't look good if you consider that against sex dolls in the Amsterdam red light district. Unless you had somebody cleaning those dolls before, after the use, you could just pass an infection on. So really, actually, I think they'd probably be worse for the red light district. But again, I don't think until you actually, you know, this engineer guy had no idea really about the reality of the sex industry before he wrote that article. He just kind of thought, oh yeah, you know, there'll be no STIs. Because it's, you know, because it's not a real vagina or whatever. But that's not how it works.
I saw in your paper that you'd spoken to the CEO of Real Dolls, to the sort of founder there. Does, like, how smart are those dolls these days? You know, at what level are they at? And
I don't think that much. I mean, Harmony isn't a full doll. Harmony's just a head, like an animatronic head that moves and interacts with you. And I think the idea is that once they perfect that, you'll be able to put that on the different, you know, bodies. So, yeah, it's not at all realistic. You know, you could have a conversation with her, but it is a head at the end of the day.
Yeah. It seems like such an engineering feat to build something that you can have sex with, doesn't it? Because it needs to look good. Yeah. It needs to function independently, and it needs to have a little bit of AI in there as well. It's quite a challenge, isn't it, actually, when you think about it?
Yeah, and I imagine it will be met one day, but I'm looking forward to see the interesting variations of it along the way.
Yeah, and there's not many male sort of real dolls, is there?
There are, and apparently male real dolls are increasingly popular. And I don't know if you've seen, but on the Real Doll website recently, they've released this like $500 dildo, and it's like the most real life looking dildo ever. You're trying to pull on the kind of, you know, the aesthetics that they've perfected with the sex, you know what I mean, with the female sex dolls and whatever. But it does look real from the, you know, from the pictures or whatever. So clearly there's something going on with their guy market there as well. Do you know what I mean?
Because you can't see it when it's in there anyway, can you?
Yeah, it's called the Real Cock 2.
Right, okay. So,
yeah. But $500 though, it's like, but it's supposed to be like real skin and like, you know, like have the foreskin on it and everything, okay. Yeah.
Wow. Do you think that is for a female market, or do you think that's for a... Do they talk about...
Yeah, I think there is a female market. Because to be honest, you know what? I think a robot would probably be easier than a fella sometimes, wouldn't it? To be honest, though...
Who the customers are, who are buying these things.
Because I think as well, the thing is, men are, in my opinion, and obviously this is totally mine, just my opinion, but what I've seen, I think guys, especially as they get older, no, in fact, just as they get older, yeah, are so much more reliant on women than women are men. 100%. My mum could be on her own tomorrow. My dad would go to bits within 2 weeks. Do you know what I mean? But my mum would actually get on fine. And I feel like it's quite similar with a lot of my friends. You know, their parents, I think, like, you know, your mum would be fine, but your dad wouldn't have a clue after a few weeks.
Yeah. Do you know what?
Yeah, I feel like guys are kind of more. I think that because women, we can communicate a lot better, and we're a lot stronger, I think, emotionally, because we're able to talk about things and deal with our feelings. Generally speaking, it kind of maybe prepares us for life better when we're older. I don't know. I don't know. But I feel like
generally we've always been second best, haven't we? So we've always had to be the ones listening and kind of doing things for others. I'm thinking historically kind of thing. And it's really only recently we're seeing more equal rights in the employment world, that sort of thing for women, and seeing more women in politics. And even then it's still not equal. But maybe because we're on this kind of change, we've got more information that we need to think about. And we've got more options than we've done in the past. So we are a bit more independent.
Yeah, I read something that made me quite angry. It was saying about during COVID-19, during lockdown, that women were doing twice as much housework and childcare as men, even when both of the couples were furloughed or off work. The only time where it came up to equality in the amount of work they were doing is when the man wasn't working at all and the woman was working full time, which I found really...
Yeah,
quite shocking.
No, I think that's disturbing. But again, I do think that that's changing with younger generations. I think that is a bit more, you know, for example, like my dad, yeah, he leaves everything to my mum. But for example, I would be very, very much less willing to do that because obviously I've got to work so many hours in my day. So I would just lose my shit after a while, to be honest with you. No, honestly, I would. Like, I've had so many arguments in my time about like washing pots with fellas. Honestly, one of them got really emotional once as well, and I just had to be like, if you're going to get upset because I've asked you to wash pots, can you just go?
Yeah.
It's like, come on, you know, three crying over pots. getting sidetracked there. But no, I think that you're right, that things are changing for women, but I don't think things are changing for guys. I think guys are in a big, big crisis in society. And I think, I mean, you know, look at the statistics for men with suicide. It's absolutely tragic, and I think a lot of the problem is that there's men feel like they can't talk about their emotions, and women, we're so much better at doing that, unfortunately. You know, I think that we really do support each other. You know, women tend to have a lot bigger support networks and networks of friends. My dad doesn't really have any mates, you know.
God, I hear that a lot as well.
This my mum has got loads of mates. And it's not just them two, do you know what I mean? It's very similar with other, you know, older couples and my friends' parents that I know. And I think that it's at a detriment to men. And for me, that's why I think that women actually could be more prone to getting a sex robot in a way, because I think realistically, the sex robots will probably be a physical thing a lot better and sooner than they'll be something like a companion, just because I think that the technology for movement and reciprocating sex is going to be a lot more achievable than, you know, to have a conversation and a friend or whatever. So by that token, women already have their friends. Women probably would be more susceptible to a physical thing. And I feel like as well, women, it's generally accepted for them to have sex toys more in society, isn't it? Like if you look at the female sex toys compared to male sex toys, it's like, it's just, there's a huge, huge difference. So perhaps really there could be a market for women, for male sex dolls, really, because I guess, you know, they would tap into the physical aspect that they want. I could imagine that, to be honest, because I think the one, like, for example, like, I could definitely not have sex, not actively look for sex and replace sex with sex toys for a bit longer, I think, for a good another 2-3 months if I put my mind to it. And I think that part of me thinks it's actually a lot easier because I always have an orgasm with a sex toy. Really, some sex that I've had in my time is shit. And like some, for that reason, like some of the only part of sex that I miss is like having a guy there. Do you know what I mean? Like the arms,
the body, blah, blah,
blah. Yeah, the body, not the brain, not the head. No, but do you know what I mean? And you can, that is what a sex robot would be. So I'm just thinking,
I'm excited.
Like,
I want one now. And I'm thinking, how is it going to work? And like, are they going to be quite mechanical and stiff? I mean, some guys like that anyway. All with yogury. Is it going to be like a sting, kundalini? You know, I don't know. I'm just quite excited, and I want it to hurry up, really.
Yeah, no, to be honest, I agree. Like, I just actually think it could be the next best thing for women. And just some, yeah, the thing is as well, you could probably still have a better conversation than with some blokes as well.
I think no, not just blokes, but some people.
Some people.
Guys, yeah, but yeah,
you could make them really interested in all your hobbies, couldn't you? Like, oh yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I thought they'd be so supportive. They would absolutely, you know, they'd give you a massive ego,
and you wouldn't care if it's just lip service. It'd be fine.
You get used to it. I think, you know, you could have it as a supplement sometimes, and just use it again as a tool. You know, in the cupboard. And
no,
and
yeah, exactly. Just could bring it out. You know, when you're feeling a bit down. I mean, to be honest as well, you know what? Maybe. You know, a bit of a role reversal. Because if guys are going to do it, it would just make sense for girls to do it as well. Do you know what I mean? And I think that it's one thing that's really put the patriarchy on its toes, hasn't it, really, is, you know, kind of beating it at its own game. And I don't think you're ever going to get away. Like, for example, I shared my considerations about porn. I know that it's really bad. I have some genuine concerns about it. Mm. Like, and they would probably be amplified so much more if I was to have a child who would one day be watching it. But I don't want to ban it. You know, like, it's like the sex industry. Yeah, there's some really shit things about the sex industry, but getting rid of it's not the answer because you can't really police sex. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. And even the porn, what I don't like about porn is not knowing, like, is that really consensual? Like, the stuff behind it, is that girl?
Yeah.
A girl? Is it like, do you know what I mean? It's things like that. So if we could just make sure it's done sort of in an ethical way, then that's fine. But yeah, it's just all the dark things that may be behind it.
Hmm.
Yeah, as well, like I said, I think that we are a long way off sex robots, and I'd be interested to see what comes before that.
A long way, what do you reckon?
Yeah.
God, like at least 50 years.
Oh, God, no, I'm dead.
We have like self-driving cars.
Yeah, that. I know, yeah, I know. It'll be a long time. I think that obviously, the military are key players, aren't they, in robots and AI and everything at the moment, and especially making them walk and everything, like.
Yeah.
I think you need big players like that to develop technology and stuff first. But so many things that will fit in, like from, you know, walking robots to Alexa.
Mm-hmm. There was something I was reading. Oh, gosh, I can't remember who it was now. Sort of a leading scientist was talking about a lot of technologies developed through military and warfare.
Oh, yeah.
And that's often like a catalyst for technology. So I wouldn't be surprised if we have robots fighting, but we have them shagging, really.
Well, as well, porn's done a lot for streaming. Do you know what I mean? Porn has done a whole of a lot for technology as well. And I imagine it, once VR starts to take off a bit more, I think they've just got to get the headset smaller, really, to be honest, for VR. Because it's just like, really, no, we don't all want to sit there with a headset on.
It's quite heavy. And yeah, if you're sitting
it's hours. Until they've got it like a pair of glasses, you're not going to, I don't think, have it really, really take off. Because it has a huge potential on that. You know, when you put them on, it is actually like, wow, I'm so immersed. But it's like, I'm just not going to be wearing this all the time. And like, especially for VR porn, you know, it's like, I was talking to my mate, like, why don't you use these more? And it's my mate, best mate's fella. Mm-hmm. And he just turned around like, oh God, yeah, I've got one of them on having a wank. And then Mel walks in, Ellie. And I was like, oh yeah, it's a good point, actually. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I never thought of that, really. Because you can't even really see who's coming in the room, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
It's a bit disorientating, isn't it? But
yeah.
I've never used them, VR glasses.
Maybe you should buy some.
Yeah.
You get some really cheap.
Okay. I'll give it a go.
It's your weekend sorted, isn't it, girl?
How do you think people would feel generally about sleeping with a sex robot? Do you think people are squeamish about it?
I think it depends. There's a thing, isn't there, like a theory called the Uncanny Valley. And it's the idea that a robot can only get so human looking before it starts to really freak us out.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's like the uncanny valley. And I think that's actually quite truthful to some extent, because I think that, you know, for example, we humanize technology and robots quite a lot. Like, for example, if, you know, like, I was at the airport the other day and there was a little like luggage robot there. And like, do you know what I mean? Everyone's making like a force and you had like a face mask on, like someone like pulled the face mask and they were like, don't do that. Like, might get corona.
Yeah.
And it was like, so, you know what I mean? And really like humanizing it. And then I think that there is a bit of a, when it becomes too human, like, it does make you a bit more afraid. So I don't really like waxworks, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. They are creepy, aren't they? Whereas I think, and the robots you're kind of seeing at the moment, the little ones, they make them all cute and kind of make them look like big eyes, sort of like kitten-like or whatever, you know, because I'd be like, oh, that's so cute. Even, but that's funny because we know it's a robot and yet we still feel something towards it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, it is... Well, it's quite common, actually. There's been quite a lot of research about it. You know, like the Tamagotchi era.
Yes.
A lot of people did research about that because people got really, really attached to the Tamagotchis. And that kind of, it wasn't even like it took the shape. Like, you know, it had the little character on there, but it was like a pocketball thing, really, wasn't it? And, you know, the creature that you had wasn't, you know, your Tamagotchi wasn't really realistic, was it? It was like this little black and white pixelated thing, but like still you were like so attached to it.
Do you think that's because you had to invest something in it and then you actually formed a bond with it?
I think that there was that element to Tamagotchis, but I think that as soon as any... I think it's human instinct that as soon as anything reminds us of being human or human quality, we tend to start treating it in a human way. Mm. And that's why there's been a lot of stipulation as well about, like, if you're aggressive to technology or something that looks like a human... you know, does that normalize the behavior? Because you know, it's not human, but you associate it with a human.
Mm.
And then by harming it, so it was like, oh, you know, what if you gave, you know, sex worker robots to people that had like violent fantasies and said, oh, you know, instead of doing that, do it on this. Would it just normalize it and reinforce that behavior? Or would it be like an urge that they'll, you know, never revisit? I personally think it's not a good idea, to be honest.
You
it's like, you know, you wouldn't, if a kid had a shoplifting problem, you wouldn't be like, oh, once a week you can go to a virtual shop and rob it. You know what I mean? Just to get it out of your system. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just really that it's, you know, it's habitual then, I think.
Mm, that's a really interesting point. But do you think you could use them potentially on someone who's violent to try and re-educate them not to be violent? So that you're not telling them to go and you know, smash it up or whatever. You're trying to tell them to interact with it in a... non-violent.
Yeah, I think that could be something useful, but I suppose by that logic, by not just expecting them to do that with a real person, it's this, you know, we'll give them something that's not real human as a safety net. And really, like, I guess that thinking, you know, would they then forget that that's a safety net, if that makes sense?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I mean, I think obviously things like that, you really, you know, need proper therapy and...
yeah, of course, yeah.
So, yeah.
You made a really interesting point before, I think, about AI and the behaviors it might pick up in a brothel if it was a robot in that environment. I thought that
like
was
machine learning.
Eleanor, you're saying about, you know, it might not learn good human behaviors from that environment. Can you talk us through that thinking a little bit?
Yeah, so there's like two big ways that I'm thinking about that at the moment. So the first is obviously if it learned bad behaviors, like you just said. So for example, like if you had a client that you know, asked you to put on animal porn or something that was against the law, like in a sexual way, would that program be likely to reciprocate that behavior again? And also as well, I guess the way machine learning works is that it learns from its responses. So by that logic, you can't get the machine to truly unlearn it. And whilst obviously that information could just lie dormant, you know, it could not have effect at all. I'd be dubious really about how long a robot could last in that sort of environment, because I think you're exposed to a lot of kind of crazy things a lot of the time. It'd be interesting to compare that to how, you know, how do sex workers learn and grow from their experiences in the sex industry? Do they have a bias? But the thing is, I think that the reason that they don't necessarily have a bias is that sex workers probably find it a lot easier to kind of contextualize you know, the information that they learn from clients on their job and their experiences, and they're obviously able to kind of look at it with a human factor. Like, for example, you know, if you had a client that was like crying and talking about his ex-missus, you'd think, oh, you know, he's going through a divorce, and mm-hmm. or, you know, or he likes that. You know, you can learn, make considerations and stipulations about people, I think, better as a human than a robot could. So I would probably argue that a human is able to process and understand a brothel better than a robot at all times, just by, you know, default of being a human.
Mm, and experience, and like you said, context. And I don't know if you, there was
love, I guess the experience of love is a huge thing as well.
Yeah. Although, I mean, I suppose some people argue it is just, that's just a chemical reaction. I mean, I wonder how many of our very human reactions actually are patterns that we could distill into, you know, kind of equations or something. I suppose there's different theories, isn't there?
Emotions and love would be the hardest ones. I mean, it's like, for example, right, if a sex robot had three clients and each one of them was really upset and did the missionary position and, you know, was saying their ex-wife's name, by that logic, that robot started to learn, think, associate tears and strange names with a sexual encounter. Mm. But a human would have a totally different approach on that, really. Mm. They'd be like, oh, well, you know, they've just been divorced.
Mm.
You know, like the connotation of the word divorce would mean something totally, totally different, I think, to a human.
Yeah.
And that was just kind of off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But obviously, as well, there was... Go on, sorry.
I was going to say, do you think robots could presumably get to grips with preferences in some way? Like what's going to cause them harm, what's going to not cause them harm? I suppose they don't experience pleasure. I'm supposed to just thinking, like, could they, maybe this is a bigger philosophical question, but if they could grow attached to clients in the way that we would recognise as a sort of human attachment or not? Too big a question, really.
Well, I suppose that they would always, in order to be successful, they need to pretend to have that attachment, don't they?
Mm, that's true.
So I guess it's by what do we truly define as love? I guess that's actually probably more of a human question. There's a lot of things to think about, I think, with sex robots. And I think that, for example, as well, you know, we're talking about preferences. Yeah, I think you could teach a sex robot preferences, but from what we've learned online about, you know, because we're constantly badged, aren't we, for our preferences for like advertising, eventually what happens is it just becomes an echo chamber because all they're trying to do is give you what you like. And by that logic, how do you find out what you don't like?
Mm. Yeah, that's true.
Like, they say that about politics. It's like, you know, people on the left, yeah, they're so, you know, it's easy to be totally absorbed in, you know, the left or the right. And part of that is, you know, your friends are in that and all your, you know, close circle. Mm. And that's it becomes the only information you ever see.
Yeah.
That echo chamber of information. Mm. So would the same happen with sexual preferences? And obviously, for me, that is, you would have to have a really, really good sex robot to be able to differentiate all those different clients. I mean, that's probably one thing that a robot might be able to do better, because it would have a better memory.
But the only thing is, as well, humans, we like variety, don't we? And like you said as well, you don't know what you don't want until you try it. That's what, so we kind of, we do seek out novel new thing experiences. So it would have to kind of look, I suppose also it depends on maybe who's kind of the creators of this robot as well. Yeah. And I know, Katie, you were kind of mentioning there's also that whole thing about AI and could it potentially become conscious, and do we have to give them sort of human rights, or do you know what I mean? And that's a kind of bigger picture thing, I think.
It's kind of a bit fitting, but they were saying that, you know, the Sophia, there was a robot that was released, well, and they were saying that, you know, she had technically had more rights than the women of Saudi Arabia.
Oh yeah, she was given rights in Saudi Arabia.
Oh really?
From a woman, yeah.
Hanson Robotics. They basically were given her like kind of legal exclusive rights to be, you know, a person in her own entity, which, you know, sadly isn't the kind of same rights.
Is it kind of like a publicity stunt thing, like just to emphasise how human she was, or was it to protect?
I think it was I think it was a bit publicity to advance, to discuss how advanced she was.
Mm.
But I think that obviously it was just, it's still food for thought, isn't it, really?
Yeah, so interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, still food for thought. And I think that, I mean, for me as well, I think that you're already getting this kind of if that pattern's already emerged between the differences between women and men and how a robot is able to compete better in that, would you eventually have that with like the class system, I guess? You know, if we have a future where, you know, we're living with robots that have just as many rights and powers and stuff as us, you know, would they start to impact human class even? Would more expensive robots be worth more than humans? Because, you know, humans are so disposable. Things like that. That would be, sci-fi is crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. But these are, you know, really interesting topics, philosophical, and it is kind of happening, is it? Well, it's things that need to be considered. And also that thing about some machine learning. So, but when, you know, what limits do you put on those? Though, because otherwise they could be. There was a thing, I don't know if you read about this, where they had like AI with them their own Twitter account, but the AI, as it was learning, it just got really racist and really offensive, and they had to shut it down. So it's like what controls could you put in place?
I think it's hard to put those controls in place when you use machine learning. That was a really interesting case. But let's be real, the reason it was taken down was because it happened in the public sphere. Yeah. And my fear would be that how would you really look at how a sex robot's going to do? You know, who would, you know, if that was going on a brothel, would everybody see it? Would it be shut down as easy? Probably not.
Yeah. Because you probably wouldn't talk about what you did with the robot, and the robot wouldn't talk about what happened to it. Things
well, I suppose
get
the
out
data would be really interesting.
Yeah.
It could as well. And I suppose, would that mean that you could just go to a sex robot and confess all your worst fantasies and things you've ever done? You know, because that would be something to consider as well, because that would be a danger, would then make it the job slightly more dangerous for sex workers, because, you know, what would they be competing against? You know, a machine that wouldn't ever be afraid of clients. A client could tell them anything, you know, any kind of perversion or kink, and, you know, they're not going to bat an eyelid, and they sort of have to compete with that, even if it's sometimes morally wrong.
Yeah. It's interesting, the question of, like, morality and sex robots or sex dolls. Like, there's been lots of stuff about that the companies won't make them look dead, for example, or...
Although they sometimes look quite young, which I find quite disturbing.
Yeah, I think that's disturbing. But I think that it's, again, whilst there's no sort of regulations, you're going to be able to have them kind of customised however, and that is worrying. I mean, it's like copying copies of people as well. I don't agree with that.
That's just creepy.
Do the companies do that? They replicate, I suppose it's like an avatar, isn't it? You can just sort of make up the different components to make it look a bit like someone, can't you?
Yeah, well, for example, real dolls say don't send us pictures of people or celebrities.
Oh, really? Okay.
So do you know what I mean? I guess that at least they're taking that stance. But then it's like, you know, if you're making it in some kind of, you know, warehouse in China where, you know, anything goes. But, you know, people are caught out of customs when they do that. And looking at, like, you know, the sexual preferences and stuff more. I mean, that could be a separate paper in itself, really. Like, you know, could a sex robot learn sexual preferences? I mean, I think that it has the capacity to store the information and recall it better. So, you know, I have a better memory. Mm-hmm. But I guess it's, you know, it loses the sentiment attached to those memories, human context. And we still, as humans, can't explain what love is and emotions. And I mean, yes, it's a chemical reaction, but let's be honest as well. It's a fucking roller coaster, isn't it?
I don't think it's just a chemical reaction. There's a lot more to it, isn't there?
Yeah, like, I still don't know what the fuck's going on with it. It still baffles my head, doesn't it, though?
I try and avoid it now.
Just really winging it, like, what else can you do?
Do you remember that episode of Sex and the City where she puts her finger in his bum and then he likes it, and then she talks to him about it afterwards, and he's really ashamed and embarrassed? I wonder if sex robots wouldn't know that, so they would just take things at face value, like, oh, you like that thing, and they wouldn't know the kind of human side of the awkwardness and the we're not going to talk about what just happened. I know you liked it, but we're not going to mention that.
Yeah. And then if they learn from enough people, the whole point is, I think, they evolve. Mm. The more they learn, the more experience they have of people, then perhaps they can connect context. And but it's going to be quite a big sort of evolution of that. If that's a common theme that guys, you know, stick your finger up their bum, and commonly they're like, oh, I don't want to talk about it, then the sex
robot. Well, they do like it, I think. I've never done it, but and I'm not just saying that, I'm actually honest. But like, I know, just because I've asked before and they're like, oh no, I don't want you to. Actually, I think I've tried it once before, but I've never been with somebody that's like into it. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I've heard from friends that it's like, do you know what I mean?
Good little trip. But it's liking something and then wanting to talk about it afterwards. So, yes. But a sex robot could learn that, okay, no, that's taboo, and then they won't kind of discuss that.
The thing is, as well, taboo isn't a global thing, is it? Well, it is a global thing, but what I mean is it's not different universal. It's not universal. So, you know, and we probably know this more than anyone, being prude Brits, don't we? you know, just apologising all the time. But, you know, how would you sort that out? Because, you know, one of the other sex toy developers, it's like that Sergi Santos, he's Spanish. What would his sex robot know that the American one didn't? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that I guess would be really interesting. Yeah, that would be really interesting because we do all relate to sex differently and that kind of taboo. And some clients actually, you know, they need that human approval. Like for a lot of, we don't like to, I think that it's not a common narrative in society, but a lot of guys really do need female approval. It's not fair to suggest that all guys have this alpha male attitude where they don't, you know, care about women or what women think, and they don't care about their appearance, because, you know, just look at Men's Health magazine and men's fitness culture. Men really do need that kind of, or feel that they need that kind of approval in society. I don't think men are always shown in a true light.
No. And women as well. I mean, you can get women who are very alpha, who don't really care, a bit psycho, that sort of, you know, but not, you know, and ones who are sensitive. I think humans just generally, or people who associate as being different, you know, different genders, I think it's complicated. And I don't think it's good to really stereotype. So I think as humans, we can all be different. I'm waffling now. You know what I mean?
No, I know what you mean as well.
Yeah, it's interesting talking about like gender and sex robots, because you can sort of have whatever you want, really, can't you? Like, it doesn't have to be like a binary choice between male or female in a sex robot.
Could it be more inclusive as to, yeah?
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, you could have ones, couldn't you, with like detachable parts and everything, couldn't you? So like one, you know, I think there's a lot of possibilities, and I think sex technology will hugely help things around gender. I think there's a big potential for like VR, because a lot more people would be willing to bend their, you know, flexibility with things like that in the bedroom if they had the, you know, the tools to do it. And I think that things like that would be more beneficial. I mean, I would love to know what sex feels like as a guy. You know, like to do it with his
partner.
Yeah. Yeah, and have sex with a girl. And then leave that body and come back to my own.
Yeah. Obviously, if you could be a guy for a weekend, what would you do? Like, you would definitely do that, wouldn't you? You'd have
to. Yeah, I'd try without being creepy. Someone like, oh my God, remember you're a guy, Ellie, and this is kind of, it's...
That would be my fear, that I'd be so shit at picking up women that I couldn't do it. That would be my fear. Yeah. I'd have like 2 days to be a man and I'd just be like totally useless at it.
But this is what I mean about guys. I think that, you know, we don't like to, society doesn't like to put it out there, but I think that guys are kind of hanging on to female approval a lot more than we think. And I think for guys as well, like a lot of guys I know would love to know what it feels like. You know, everything is about penetrative sex, which is a bad narrative for both sexes. Because let's be honest, a lot of guys, they get to a certain age, they definitely can't have penetrative sex as much as they could before. You know, like for people in the queer community, the trans community, focus on penetrative sex is, you know, not helpful to them, doesn't make them feel valid. I mean, I guess lesbians are constantly kind of put under that kind of scrutiny, like, oh, what, you scissor? That's not sex. Like,
we have a real bias towards heterosexual. That, and also I was going to say, well, what I think could potentially really be helpful, especially with like VR, is if you're born into the wrong body and you want to explore, you know, being in a different body, that could be, and it could just educate people about the different genders.
Yeah, 100%. I think that there will be a lot of sex education in VR. Sure, for sure. Technology will help human sexuality a lot, just because it's, I guess it will diversify the information. It's an accessible form of information for people, and getting that information is key to making good decisions about sex.
And it's safe as well. And I think maybe we've mentioned before, you know, if you've maybe had a traumatic sexual experience, that maybe this could help you to kind of, you know, get over that a little bit in some way with therapy and everything as well.
Yeah, no, yeah, 100%. I think that there's a massive potential for things like that, because I think that it would give you some more control, wouldn't it, to explore a situation if you were, you know, upset or perhaps anxious about it. And I think as well that it's accessible, you know, if you live in a deprived area and you don't have, you know, access to support for sexual trauma, sexual abuse, I guess VR could make it more accessible. I mean, I don't want to go down that road of saying like, oh, replace people or therapy with VR, but you know, for example, like in an instance like now with the corona, if you can't see a therapist or you can't get out and that's your alternative, it is definitely better than nothing, 100%.
Yeah.
I think some people would prefer that, a virtual experience actually sometimes to therapy, when it's an issue like that, because I guess some people don't actually like always speaking about it. So, yeah.
Or again, I mean, it's a different way of kind of trying to heal, maybe. So you could use both anyway, and it could just be...
Yeah, for sure, in combination, yeah.
Would you date someone who had a sex robot?
I guess not now, because I don't think they're mainstream enough. I mean, it depends. The only reason I would say no is because... The only reason that you would buy one now is because you would be, like, obsessed with having
really?
Sex.
What, because of the cost?
Because they're only so physical,
you have to be quite
invested. Yeah, also as well, a lot of the people that own these sex dolls, right, they're like, they actually kind of, that, you know, like they're almost like obsessed and have like an emotional relationship with the doll as well. I'm an outgoing person. I want to be with someone that's actually talking to people, you know, not using it, like, you know, not, you know, for me it's almost like a hobby.
They seem to be really quite obsessed about it, and it's kind of takes over their whole life, and they're kind of making sure it's, you know, dressed properly and stuff, and I don't think they're just sort of hobbies, if that makes sense.
No, like it's a total emotional investment, like that's why as well, like, you know, in fairness, when people, you know, you've seen kind of like the stigma that would be attached with sex dolls, they'd say, oh, you know, it must be like a weirdo that just wants to, you know, harm it, or, you know, do some fucked up fantasy on it. And then when you see him kind of dressing it up and having tea with it, you just think, oh well, you know. But like I said, it comes down to as well, like, you know, we do kind of endorse human, you know, human looking things of human qualities, and by that notion, you know, generally as humans, I know a lot of us are shit and do shit things, but generally we don't see someone in the street and go up to them, punch them in the face, do we? We say hi, smile. You know, generally we try to be somewhat pleasant. You know, it's not enough instinct to, you know, to always be violent and aggressive. So, you know, we shouldn't expect that would be the norm with a sex robot. But I think the idea that they are just for sex arouses suspicion with people. But is that a cultural thing? Is that a societal thing? You know, in like 50 years, are we all going to be like in a sex, you know, revolution again? Who knows? Because it wasn't really a revolution last time, I don't think.
If you're going to invest in a really high-tech sex robot in your home, it would almost be more like that series Humans, wouldn't it, where it's someone living amongst your family and supporting and doing stuff like that, perhaps, because it would be an investment in labor, really, wouldn't it, as much as anything else.
But at the moment, the ones that are about, the technology isn't that great, so again, it's not even like it is kind of living, like it's not really interacting, is it, like a... Or it's kind of, I mean, there's some people that fall in love with inanimate objects and marry them and things like that. So
is there?
Yeah.
What did they fall in love with?
One woman, I remember seeing something about, she fell in love with the Eiffel Tower. And it does sound funny, but she genuinely fell in love with it. She kept getting arrested because she was trying to have sex with it. But people do, and someone married like a train station. And again, like this whole thing of like, what is love? Yeah, what is love? You know, because you can feel it about other things. Mainstream people, we have, you know, we find love with people. But that's not to say, I don't think... their love is any less valid, to be honest.
Yeah. No, it is interesting. I'm just thinking that I'm sure I read one about someone that fell in love with a roller coaster. Actually,
really?
Yeah.
How do you verify that, though?
Yeah, must have been a rider.
That's so weird. I wonder if, like,
how do you verify love anyway?
Yeah, how do you? You can't just ask.
You can't really. It's
totally in love with it.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, that's why I think that people will fall in love with sex robots, because, you know, people think love is reciprocal. It's obviously not, is it?
No, no, that's a really good point.
It's defo not.
Oh, it's defo not. Unrequited love. I mean, God, there's been poetry for thousands of years around that. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
That's true. So inanimate objects are just as vulnerable to it as humans in that way, aren't they, I suppose? If it doesn't have to be reciprocated, you don't have to be conscious, do you? Unrequited love from a toaster, though, or something, that would be really hard.
I know.
That'd be quite easy.
That's a bad week.
That'd be a simple one.
Yeah, I've had unrequited love from worse, like.
So what does the future hold then, Eleanor? What can we look forward to, do you reckon?
Oh, God, who knows? Who knows at this point, getting out of lockdown?
One step at a time.
Yeah, obviously I'm going to still be with Kiro. I really do love the job there, to be honest. I really love the work. Obviously just going to do this paper about the brothels. I'm hopefully going to work with that on other people, just because it's so much easier writing with other people.
Yeah, you bounce ideas off each other, don't you, more?
Yeah, 100%. It's so much better. But yeah, I'll definitely be staying in this area, so I'll have to keep you updated.
Yeah, oh, yeah, please do. That'd be so good.
Yeah, ooh. Let me know if you get to Blackpool as well.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
We should have a geeky sex robot night on the town drinking.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, it'd be so amazing. It's so great really talking exciting. With you.
Yeah. Oh, no worries, hon. I will send you over that article about the sex robots and Corona and whatever.
Yeah, that'd be really cool, actually. That'd be really good.
Oh,
thanks, Eleanor.
Brilliant. All right, then. Speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Curious Talks with Leif and Elfie.
Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.